Here.
Thanks. We will, tonight's agenda is, and we have both Carly Payne and Tony Henderson from the SFMTA. Excited to have them here. Obviously, it's good that they're here. This is their content area. And we were just having a little sidebar conversation around how do we think about how the developers work with the city proactively around creatively looking at transportation solutions before you get to the EIR process, so that we can be proactive and come up with some good solutions in a proactive way versus the reactive way. So thumbs up to that. And tonight we're going to be talking about access, circulation, and parking. And the one thing I want to say is that it is the beginning of a conversation, because it's not going to all get handled tonight. Like they did last time, they'll take you through content area, then we'll pause, and then there'll be a chance to engage. And how it'll work is we'll go to public comment first, and then the CAC members will respond after we've heard from the public. Okay, so without further ado, we can get started, and turn it over to you, Joe.
All right, I'll we really get started.
I apologize, I am losing my voice, so I'm gonna hang in there for as many questions as we can get today, but if I can't hear me anymore, one of these folks can jump in. I'm Joe Kirchhoffer from Avalon Bay. Thank you all for being here tonight. Our slides are moving around a little bit, but we've been talking about this meeting for a while. We know this is a really critical topic. We're excited to engage with you on it. Before we do that, we should just do a quick round of intros. And one of the pieces of feedback we got in the past is it's hard to keep track of who everyone is. So we'll put our little work chart slide up here again. So just really quick overview. Avalon Bay and Bridge Housing are the two partners. We are the master developers jointly. And then we will be developing this site once we get the whole thing approved, get it built. Mission Housing, Habitat for Humanity, and Pacific Union Development will build out pieces of it in addition to Bridge and Avalon Bay. So as we do our introductions, there's folks from all those organizations here. And then there's a bunch of design team members here as well. So there's folks from Piatok Architects and Van Heter Williams Pollock Architects. So those are all the names you'll hear. If you're ever confused about who people are, feel free to cut us off and say what you want. So Joe Kirchhoffer from Avalon Bay, you guys want to just go through and...
want to introduce ourselves?
Yeah.
Brad Wibblin with Bridge Housing.
Kevin Griffith with Bridge Housing.
Joe Ruiz, Pacific Union.
Scott Falcone with Mission Housing.
Peter Waller with Piatok Architects.
Marcel Chow with Piatok Architects.
Karen Murray with Van Meter Williams Pollock.
Kushal Modi with Van Meter Williams Pollock.
Wendy Mock with GLS Mason
Architects.
Alright.
So. Okay, Dylan.
Kirsten
with Piatok
Architects.
Okay, so do it again. Dylan, do it again.
Dylan Verstey with Piatok Architects.
Kirsten. Okay. So again, if you're confused about who people are, what organization they're with, feel free to stop us and ask. So access, parking, circulation, that's how we put it on the agenda. We've said before that this is a critical topic for this project. We are not going to be able to be successful as developers, as creators of a new community, unless we're successful in solving the problems of access, transit, circulation, parking. That's successful in terms of, I don't know that we'll get the project approved, sort of, in the first case. And then in the second case, even if we built it out, if we haven't really solved these problems, if we haven't come to good solutions, you know, we're all long-term owners of these buildings and long-term managers. And if we've created a place that's unlivable, we're not going to have a successful community. We're not going to have a place that people want to live, want to visit, want to pay rent for, or want to buy homes in. So this is something that we all need to get right. We need your input to get it right. So that's why we're here. I was reminded this morning, and many of us last week heard about this, that this topic is really critical in another way as well. And I don't know how many folks here know, but there was a fatal pedestrian accident on Ocean, I believe Ocean Miramar or Ocean Plymouth, last week. So this is something that, you know, as designers and, you know, all the engineers and everybody else that's working on this, as real estate developers, you know, we it's easy to get lost in, like, oh, we're looking at slides, we're looking at plans, but the decisions we make and the stuff that we design, the stuff that we build affects people's lives. You know, we hear it more often that, oh, you know, we're going to do this or that to traffic, or I'm not going to be able to find a place to park, but, you know, if we don't get this right, it affects people's safety, and that's something that's absolutely critical. We're going to talk about a lot of streetscape improvements and some of the things we're going to talk about tonight and throughout the project. So I guess I just say, I bring that up so that you know that we know that this is something we need to take seriously. So with that, I just want to go through our agenda really quickly. We're going to do a quick recap of some of the process stuff and the timeline that we have ahead of us. Also going to do a recap of what we heard from the last meeting when we talked about open space. And then we've got three main topics for tonight. The first two, so circulation, pedestrian, bicycle, vehicular. We got into some of that last week when we talked about how we would organize the site in the open space. We're going to get into that quickly again today. Also spend a little bit of time on off-site improvements, and what that means is the opportunities that we have, or that we collectively with the city and the MTA have to improve the access to the site by doing things that aren't on the site. Doing things at the intersection, doing things on the walks or the bike down the park. So those sorts of improvements, other things in the surrounding neighborhoods. So that'll be another topic we touch on. We kick this around. We weren't sure if we wanted to talk about this tonight because it is such a big topic, and there are so many different things to others. You know, there's 10 different plans out there for how we're going to solve this stuff. So we had talked about, should this just be a standalone meeting sometime in 2018? It probably still will be one. But we did want to bring it up here, and we heard feedback last time that MTA should be here and should be listening to these things. So MTA, as Lisa said, MTA is here. So thank you guys for being here. And they, depending on how many questions we get, how late we go, they were hopefully going to be kind enough to stay after and answer some questions after we're done. And then the third topic, we're trying to have it be third because we want to make sure there's enough time for it because we know it's a big topic, is parking. And I want to lay out what we're going to be able to do today and what we're not. We are just beginning the process of collecting some data. We've heard a lot of times that we need more data. We need to really understand the usage of this of the current the lot right now. So we're working on getting that data. We're going to need that data to come to any conclusions on sizes, numbers, things like that. What we want to talk about today is our methodology and the strategies that we have to say, okay, when we get this data, when we understand how many people are parking here, how many people are going to need to park here in the future, this is what we're going to do with that data, how we're going to plug it in order to design a solution that works. And a solution that works for us, a solution that works for City College and the surrounding neighborhoods. So that's our approach today. We're going to get into the methodology. We're going to explain the process. We're not going to get into a whole lot of numbers. We can talk about it in the Q&A, but we don't have the answers to the numbers yet. We don't know how many spaces are in these garages yet. But we know how they're going to work, and when we get the data for how many need to be in those garages, we'll be able to look at it. And then finally, we'll talk about next steps and going further in the process. So a little overview of tonight. Karen, you want to talk about the process to do?
We showed the slide at a couple of meetings before, but for people who haven't been here and just to catch up, this is the overall master planning timeline. Beginning, the number one began in fall of 2014 with the planning department and working with the CAC to develop the parameters. And I know it began, there was time before that too. But that the development of the parameters and the RFP development led to our selection as the development team. And now we're in fall 2017, the number two there. We've been selected. This is our third CAC meeting, our second workshop with you all. And we'll be continuing this community engagement process through next year. We're working towards a city submittal early or late winter, around February, end of February, March, something like that, to initiate technical feedback from the city. So that's where the parking counts come in, and other environmental studies will be started about then. After that, we'll continue to have these CAC meetings, but we'll also be developing and refining the master plan. So that submittal is not the final submittal. We'll continue to work on the master plan. You know, it's a really tight turnaround to that point. And then hopefully around the fall of 2018, we'll have a draft master plan based on that technical feedback. So we'll get the feedback from the city and the consultants and incorporate that into the plan. So that's kind of the overall timeline. In terms of community engagement, we're trying to engage with people on a number of different levels. We've got these meetings, the CAC meetings, which are happening every month, and will continue through 2018. We're trying to have a couple of different kinds of meetings. We had a walk-in tour a couple weeks ago that a lot of people came out to. It was really great. We're planning an open house in late January that we'll set up somewhere around here and be available for 2 days for anyone to come in and ask us questions about any particular topic. We'll have boards, and a lot of the development team and signers will be there, so that's a little more open. We've also been having just smaller meetings with neighborhood groups and stakeholders, and those will also continue throughout next year. And we're engaging with City College. So those, on all those levels, we're trying to get as much input as we can into the master plan so we can come up with the best solution. So these are the meetings that we've had so far. We had an intro meeting, we had public open space last month, we had the walk-in tour. Here we are at the transportation and circulation meeting tonight. In January, we'll have the housing and neighborhood character meeting, which will be really, I think people enjoy that one. And we're also hoping to have that open house. Then the final meeting, sustainable design, kind of brings all of these elements together into how do you create a sustainable community. And that meeting might be downtown. We're looking at a downtown location for that.
Actually, not a downtown location.
Oh, okay, sorry.
A centrally location of Civic Center that's got good transportation
okay.
to it. And there's one other thing.
And then the other thing is, if you go back to the previous slide, the January 22nd meeting is not the regular date because the week before is the holiday. So we're not meeting at our regularly scheduled time. But moving forward, the meetings will be our regular second Monday of the month.
Okay.
Lisa,
thanks.
Can you explain what you said when the microphone wasn't on about downtown meeting?
Oh, so there was a request at several meetings to have a meeting not in the community but in a central location. And so we are looking to have the sustainable design meeting be down, ideally in the Civic Center area because it's centrally located with transportation. A lot of people asked to have one meeting because although this is a project that directly impacts our neighborhoods, that they requested because it is a citywide project that there would be one meeting that would be in a more central location. So
that's because it's difficult to get out here by public transportation.
I think it's because they want to be able to have people come out. So
okay.
Lisa, the 8th is the second. Why do you talk about the 15th? The 8th is the second Monday. Why bother?
Yeah, Emily.
So we thought that the 8th was awfully close to the holidays in terms of really wanting to have this housing and neighborhood character meeting at a time when people were back and settled in. And so we started looking at the 15th, realized that was a holiday, and then the next Monday after that is the 22nd.
Because January 1st is a Monday. So.
Yeah.
That was the reason they stated the public comment that they wanted the meeting downtown because it was difficult to get here. So just to refresh you.
Yeah, I think that's clear.
That's on the record.
Yeah, it's on the record. Yeah.
So after that round of meetings, those were we laid out the first, and we're starting to look at what the second round of meetings will be. Just and wanted to let you all know. We'll be circling back. We want to look at the public open space again, look at the programming of those spaces, what's actually going to be happening in those public open spaces. Coming in, look at transportation. As we learn more information, we'll be able to bring more detailed information back to you. Housing and neighborhood character, we'll come back to that again. So we'll be coming back to all of these topics that we're walking through in these first four meetings with more detailed information and more design work as we develop the design also. So those will happen next year. Transportation, we know that that's a large issue, and we'll come back to that too. Also with sustainability. So all of these topics we'll come back to one more time. So in the last few months, we've been meeting with neighbors, a lot of different groups, and just wanted to give you an idea of the different groups we've been meeting with. We've met with neighbors from Sunnyside and Westwood Park, Ocean Avenue merchants, elected officials. We have other meetings scheduled in the next month that we'll be meeting with other neighbors. We had the walking tour that we mentioned, and we have a couple pictures of that. That was great. We've met with City College a couple times, and we're working on the location for the open house. So. A little dark to see the pictures, but these are just a couple pictures from that walking tour. It was a great day. So we wanted just to recap the open space concept meeting a little bit. We talked about the central location. We did hear from heard both sides about the pros and cons of the central open space. We know that some people wanted the space on the west side and different locations, but we felt that people generally liked that thought of the central open space that was open to the public. The connections, people thought we had good connections to Ocean Avenue. We've been really working on that wherever we can because we know we've been so hemmed in on many sides. People wanted the open space to feel truly public and for us to really work on that in terms of the design to make it a public park. People wanted more information about the programming and the uses of that space, and that's what we'll be coming back to in the next open space meeting. So as we have more time to design now, we're sort of setting the framework for the site, and then we'll come back in and look at those spaces and what specifically needs to go into them. Folks thought that the surrounding buildings should support the open space, so we're working on framing the buildings, laying out the buildings to frame the open space, having entrances from front doors and stoops on the open space, enforcing a lot of activity on the open space. And there were questions about what's allowed on the PUC easement, and we need to work with PUC further to actually figure that out. There's a lot of requirements for what can't go there, and we want to make sure that what we do works with them and also with our design. Other questions that came up that were...
Can you show us where the easement is?
Excuse me?
Please point where the easement
we're gonna get to that.
We'll have a plan.
Is the easement on the south side or on the
yes.
west
right,
side?
Right,
it's on the south side, directly behind those Ocean Avenue buildings where the Whole Food is and the Phil's.
Because
so.
We are often talking about an easement which is on the west side.
Okay. And
well,
we're
that's a separate... That's
yep.
a separate thing.
So the one, the PUC easement is that big, the wide one that's just behind those Ocean Avenue buildings. So other questions that came up were height of buildings, location of garages and vehicle access, whether or not we would have retail. Some of these we know the answers to, and some of them we're still figuring out. We're still figuring out specifically what the heights of the buildings will be. We're looking at, as the site gets designed, we'll know more accurately where the garage entries will be on the buildings. We're showing our conceptual locations now, and as we design the buildings, we'll know that more specifically. We are not thinking that we will have retail on the site at this point, just because we want to support the Ocean Avenue merchants and not draw away from that. There were questions about emergency vehicle access, and we, last week, had our first meeting with fire, so we'll be working with them to make sure that the site has access and is safe for all the residents. So that's our general overview, and we can pause now for questions or anything anybody wants to ask about that portion. Does anybody have any questions about timeline or the last meeting recap? Okay, all right, great, and we can move right on to Peter.
Maybe I'll use the, I'll try the traveling mic. All right, good evening, folks. Peter Waller, Piatok Architects. And I'm going to dive into the sort of this first piece about the transportation. Thanks to everybody who came to the walking tour. That was fun for us. Productive. It's always a nice way to see a site and learn more about a neighborhood. So thank you. We'd love to do those again. See more of the neighborhood on the next round. What we want to do tonight is focus on this transportation issue. As Joe and Karen mentioned, we're going to start kind of with some issues on the site, bikes, pedestrians, vehicles in and out. We're going to talk a little bit about this connection, and then we're going to pause for some conversation about that. Any questions? And then we'll delve in. I'll turn it over to Joel, and we'll delve into the parking question. So just so folks understand, that's two pieces. Let's just back up for a second there, Marcel. The transportation obviously is all about connections, so we have to look at it in a bigger context. This is a really interesting neighborhood, complex, has evolved over time. All these pieces have come together, you know, over really more than 100 years in an interesting way, sometimes in an imperfect fit, but a lot of really terrific both community facilities, neighborhoods, and then all this great transportation infrastructure. And as Joe said, boy, we got to get it right in terms of the connection to all these things. That is really our challenge. Next slide. The CAC parameters and principles do, again, a great job of framing where we're going with this. And these really are our principles at this point. We take these completely to heart. I'll just go through them real quickly so to refresh everyone's memory. Manage the parking availability for on-site residents, also to meet City College enrollment goals, and coordinate the policies for the surrounding neighborhoods. So to manage all of those parking aspects. Second one, improve the experience of utilizing transportation choices between Balboa Reservoir site, transit, and adjacent neighborhoods. So it's us connecting to transit, it's also connections with existing neighborhoods. Number three, minimize the development's congestion impacts, especially on adjacent areas, while also maximizing pedestrian and bicyclist safety. As Joe said, something we take to heart. Principle four, encourage the use of sustainable modes of transportation, walking, biking, transit ridership, car sharing, carpooling, through coordinated programming communications. And this is both a design issue, but also a long-term management issue. Again, one of the benefits of this is we have long-term owners as developers here. So that's an implementation challenge for them also over time. What we've done is taken those principles and created a set of goals that kind of guide our immediate design. Number one, make walking, biking, and transit the obvious choice for residents, for new residents. That is a very high priority as we think about organizing the site. Two, help address the auto congestion in the area. Three, protect the street parking in existing neighborhoods for existing residents. And number four, find a solution that satisfies City College's parking needs. So those are kind of our working goals, but they're all just tied to and come directly out of the CAC principles. So pedestrian circulation, you guys have heard us talk about this a couple of times, but understand it's we see this as a very particular opportunity. San Francisco is a great walking town, but this has the potential to take that to another level. We have wonderful opportunities for pedestrian connections and lots of good places to walk and all this excellent transit. We're going to provide at least these four connections to Ocean Avenue, including through opening up Brighton Plaza there by Whole Foods, a connection to the library up in the upper left, the library courtyard, down to Ocean Avenue along Lee, and then this very critical diagonal connection that takes us down to Unity Plaza and to the Muni stop and then on to BART. So those four points for us are really the thrust of this pedestrian connection. Also important is up to City College, and we talked about last week with the open space, this opportunity to open that space to City College, and then that also becomes a major pedestrian connection, and then the opportunity potentially to connect there across to Westwood Park, which would give, of course, that neighborhood the opportunity to come directly down into this open space. And then connections within the neighborhood, and also importantly, connections up to Sunnyside, because those folks are going to want to make use of this open space and these walking opportunities as well. Next slide. So these pedestrian ways are really not just infrastructure, they're open space. This is a pedestrian realm, and in addition to these great public open spaces, we're going to have these more intimate walking areas. So there's a whole network of connected places to walk that are also wonderful outdoor spaces. Next slide. Bicycle parking, bicycle circulation. Equally critical, of course, in terms of offering folks some alternatives to get around the neighborhood. This is going to be a major importance here as we develop Lee Avenue, connected down to Ocean Avenue, and then across up to the bike way on Holloway that's been developed and I believe is being improved. And this gives folks a way to go from Phelan, Sunnyside, cross Ocean, go on down Ocean, or cross up to Holloway and avoid the Phelan and Ocean Avenue intersection, a critical path. Then within the site, we're imagining that there'll at least be one major loop around, more or less around the perimeter, that is a shared bike and auto way, a share road, to use that term, which is a very slow street. There are offsets, other devices to slow cars down so bikes and cars can share that safely. And then within the site, we'll study how to allow bikes to travel slowly with pedestrians. So that's a major design subject, something we have to talk about with the city. But certainly, you know, this is going to be a place for families. Go to the next slide. And both the walking and the biking is going to be important to supporting that as a family environment. So we also want to think about how we can integrate those two things together. Next slide. And then the vehicle circulation. So our initial proposal really focused on, well, first of all, two primary access points for this neighborhood. The connection to Lee down at Ocean Avenue, where there's an existing traffic light that allows folks who want to go west on Ocean to go that direction without going through the Phelan intersection, provides a connection across to Ingleside. The second main connection, auto connection is down to Phelan, where again there's another existing traffic light. And then within the site, and then this is imagined as just a two-lane road on Lee with the bike lanes on each side. Within the site, this road that would be shared bikes and cars, our notion is that's really mostly on the perimeter of the site. It gives access to parking, which is below the structures. The actual configuration of that road will probably evolve a little bit. Karen touched on the fact that we've started meeting with fire departments, the city. Vehicles may need to go a few more places as we deal with loading and waste collection. But we're going to try to hold on to this idea that the priority in the middle of the site is really bikes, walking, families, open space, and the auto is slow and kind of happens in support around the perimeter. Next slide. There's the Shero on the shared street and bikeway on Holloway. Next slide. And then all of these things, bikes, walking, autos, we think of them as separate systems, but then our job is to integrate those into a neighborhood that has some real character. This is our original plan. It's going to evolve. Everything on here is going to move around and change a little bit. But that idea of making a cohesive place where all those things work together, we're going to hang on to that. Next slide. So just stepping back again to the overview, we want to spend a moment on the subject of off-site improvements. And actually, we're going to have to address off-site improvements, off-site impacts all the way around the site. That includes talking about potential parking, resident parking permits in surrounding neighborhoods. We're going to have that conversation with folks, with MTA, and we're willing to work on that because that's a critical tool for us. But we also really want to put some focus on this stretch of Ocean Avenue between Geneva down to San Jose, which is, for so many of our folks and neighborhood folks, the route they're going to be taking, sometimes in cars, but often foot, bike, or transit. Go to the next slide. We've been talking to MTA about this. As Joe said, we are really just getting started on this process. There's been a lot of studies that have already happened. But the things we know so far are that the Ocean Avenue improvements from Geneva to San Jose have been submitted as part of a 5-year capital improvement plan. These folks can answer questions if there are more about that. So there's a movement to get it into that 5-year plan. The funding will have to be worked out. The key issue is going to be really getting folks together around what are the improvements that we want to focus on, what are the improvements that we can afford. There'll be an opportunity in early part of 2018 to start that discussion. And the last point is what I just said. Really, though, the thing is, what do we agree on that should be done and should be done first? Next slide. The piece across the top is that section from the Phelan intersection down to BART. This is from the Ocean Geneva study down in 2015. We had an opportunity to walk it the other day with a couple of folks from the city staff, from our walking consultant, Dan Burden, who's a nationally known guy who does this all over the place. And we've walked it a number of times. It was great to walk it as a group and talk about it. There's a lot of challenges, but you also realize there's a lot of opportunity to fix things as you go along. And it's something that is going to be, it's critical for us. It's something that we've already committed to putting some money into, a $2 million commitment to off-site improvements. And while we're not going to be leading this design process, we think we have an opportunity to kind of encourage it to move forward in parallel with our planning process for the reservoir site. We think it really needs to happen in parallel with that. So we're looking for opportunities to help move that process forward. Next slide. And there's some things happening already along that street that are going to be improvements. And actually, Joel and GLS Landscape are both involved with improvements at LIC, which are going to include an enhanced streetscape. So that's a piece of the puzzle already. Helps reinforce some of the better stuff that City College has done, the improvements City College has made across the way. So that's a framing of where we're at right now, thinking about the off-site, starting the conversation. Joe?
Parking permits.
Parking permits. I talked about parking permits.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Briefly. Joe missed it.
Okay.
We're glad to talk about parking permits as part of the off-site discussion. So let's go to the next one. So I think we are just going to pause there, and if you're interested in any questions folks have, but about what we're thinking about pedestrian connections, bikes, autos, the focus or priorities of the off-site issues. And I think we'll start right here, and I'll pass the mic and grab another one.
I don't think we need,
I'll just repeat.
The mic anymore, right?
I'll repeat questions that they're not allowed to.
Yeah. Okay. The diagram that you showed with the proposed circulation there, I note that the shared parking garage is located on the corner closest to Sunnyside and Phelan and Judson. You keep mentioning that Phelan will take a certain amount of traffic, and almost all of that traffic will end up also going on Judson, which is not mentioned at all. You've got the shared parking garage in that corner, and you also have the other parking garage to the west of that, which I believe also would be using that same exit. So we've got the burden of all the vehicular traffic coming out onto Sunnyside. At the same time, you're not showing any sort of friendly connection in your diagram of your walkways and other things that would come into our corner. So we're really, I think, again, being treated very much as an afterthought and as a convenient route to dump all of the cars that will be using both the shared parking garage and at least one of the other parking facilities.
Yeah, and Marcel, I'm going to ask you to just go back to that world diagram. I thank you for that comment. Did folks hear the comment fairly well?
Yeah.
So I think the comment about the shared use garage and the whole corner, we do hear that we need to pay attention to Sunnyside and the connections and how this place feels as you come in. So, and I think in terms of traffic impacts, we'll be talking about that more in terms of parking and the traffic studies, and we're going to be learning more about that, but things are all still being thought about here, so this is the time to hear that feedback. Yeah.
The other thing, we've talked about this a little bit, but you know, the connection from this site to Sunnyside goes along that street where it says 2 Phelan Avenue right here. This block is the connection, really, you know, over to Phelan. And this is one of the things we are eager to dig into with City College. And we've had the conversation a little bit, but we need to get a lot deeper into it. But, you know, whatever we do here has to flow through here as well. So that's something that will be a topic that we are addressing when we dig into it with them.
Yeah, Mike.
Do you want comments now, or would you prefer
Mike,
to
actually,
at the
Mike,
end?
Actually, what I'd love is, I suggest is that, is there any other comments from the audience at
large? Okay.
And then go.
Because I can reserve my comments to the end.
I'm sorry?
Is this public comment?
Yeah, so this is like, we want to hear from you first. This is.
What are you doing tonight? I mean, after this, does the public speak?
No, Anita, I think it was, the idea was, is that, and I said it at the beginning, I'll say it again.
Maybe you need a microphone.
Sure.
Here, I'll go back to the mic. So I said it at the beginning, and I will say it again now. The idea is that after each presentation, we want to first hear from the community. After the community has either asked their questions for clarification or provided feedback, then it will come to us as a CAC to have the last comment. Okay?
So general comment, question, feedback. I think the difference, what I want to make be clear about general comments or the public comment period is that this is also a time where you can ask a question if something's not clear versus just how we've done public comment in the past, which has been kind of asked and answered, okay? So, great. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to just get up and I'm going to pass the mic.
I'm going to make mine quick. I brought this issue up before. Vehicular traffic, according to the DMV, a bicycle being ridden is a vehicle. So when you say vehicle lanes and whatever, they should specify the type of vehicle.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Good point.
Okay. Who's going next? Who has your hand up? Anita, you?
Yes. Hi. Anita Theo Harris, Westview Park Association. So the parking, the market rate homes are going to have a garage of their own or a space, right?
They will not.
People, well, the
there
people,
will be some.
Market rate. That's my first question.
Yes, there will be some dedicated parking on each on these larger sites.
Right.
Yes.
The dedicated for the people who buy the townhomes. Okay.
Oh.
Right, but that's my question though. They are going to be get parking spaces.
Correct, and the townhomes, and just to distinguish, the preliminary idea is that there are townhomes. The idea is that there are townhomes. Thank you for pointing, Marcel, along that western edge.
Right.
That would have their own dedicated parking, a garage for each unit in the house. And then in addition, in the apartments, which are the larger buildings, would have dedicated parking for those residents under that building.
Okay, and when you say the apartments have affordable housing component, and they also have market rate.
Correct.
Rentals. So, what you're saying here is that, first of all, is it bundled or unbundled parking?
Unbundled. Which is required by the city.
Exactly. So that means the people in the affordable housing, the people of modest means, if they need to go to work and have a car, then they're going to have to pay extra for parking.
Right.
Is that true?
Yes. There's nuance to it, and what I might ask is we're going to talk about parking in a moment, and in some more detail, and I think it's a good question, and maybe that could even be addressed in that conversation.
Yeah. So because because what I was thinking was you were asking a question that then had an impact on a circulation question.
Fine.
But so let's see if it comes. We'll come back to you.
We'll make a note of that question. Yeah, and come back with.
So right now the feedback is specific to pedestrian, vehicular, and
bikes. The off-site improvements on Ocean Avenue, if you have comments about those.
Some of us were concerned about having San Ramon, because that was a question mark on one of the charts, about having bicycle and or pedestrian access, not vehicles. But if you have people who don't want to pay for parking as part of their purchase, they're going to park on Plymouth and then walk in on San Ramon.
Right, right.
So that's going to impact
Plymouth. Right, the concern. And that's where the resident parking permits might be part of the conversation about how to address that concern. So that's, and that's why we've been a little gentle about the conversation. We think in the end of the day, it'll be a benefit for the neighborhood to be able to come through and use the park. But we certainly don't want folks to take what the parking is already, I know, very limited and needed there.
And then if we go back to our slide with the goals on it, one of our goals is to, I forget how we put it, protect street parking in existing neighborhoods for existing residents. So we're aware of this issue. We've heard from Westwood Park about it. We've heard from Sunnyside about it. The reason we have a question mark there is because we don't have the solution to that yet. We have heard very strongly held opinions from neighbors about that issue. We've heard very strongly held opinions from a variety of city departments about that issue. So it's something we haven't solved yet. And we need to work on.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah.
I don't know if this is the right time, but I have to go a little farther back because I most probably missed something. Lisa went to the City Hall meeting and I never heard a report. I only heard that we have to be content with 1,200 units plus. Why did City Hall and the CAC agreed on the highest maximum of units when we had other offers available? That's question number one. Question number two is, don't you think that this is a fire trap? Because when you have 2,000 people in there, more or more, how can they escape when we have an earthquake? How can they escape when we have a fire? If you only have two road beds in for over 2,000 people. I wish to have a presentation from PG&E pertaining to plastic gas pipes underground, which will melt when you have a fire. And I would like to have a presentation from the fire department pertaining to water pressures in the southern region of San Francisco. And I need a promise from the developer that those apartments which are on city land, quote unquote, financed by the city, quote unquote, should only go to people who are working in the city. That should not go to any other person outside of San Francisco. It is very enticing to have BART and hop onto BART and work in Oakland. It is very enticing to hop into your car and drive to Silicon Valley on the 280 freeway. And I want you to be responsible when you rent or sell those units, that they are only going to be rented or sold to people who work in San Francisco. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I'll take a stab at a couple of those questions. The emergency access issues are critical. We are talking to the fire department. You're absolutely right. We have to make it safe. One of the advantages we have is actually the open space actually helps us because we have more space between buildings. So there's certainly lots of areas in San Francisco built more densely than this. So, but it's critical. We have to look at water pressure and all those things.
Yes, we don't have any water pressure when it comes to earthquakes.
And so
the southern region of the city.
Okay. So we have to make sure we have to have a backup system of some sort then for that. And you know, in terms of the numbers of units, there's lots of background on that before we were involved in that, but we were not the highest proposal of the proposals that were submitted to the city. So the conversation of the right number of units is the conversation we're having. We think what we're proposing can fit comfortably here and meet the very extreme need for housing. Housing at all incomes, which is an amazing opportunity on this site. In terms of the dedication of housing, I might let the developer follow up on that. And thanks, Brad.
So I think the question was about housing preference. So the City of San Francisco, through the Mayor's Office of Housing, does have a preference program for projects that they participate in. And that's about when you live locally as opposed to whether you're employed locally. And if Emily or anyone else wants to add nuance to that, that's my understanding. We're not going to get in great detail tonight, but we are proposing and have discussed briefly with City College about actually providing housing for people that are employed at City College. So that would be a sort of offshoot to your question. There would be a preference there, so to speak, based on your employment.
Does that help to solve the shortcoming of housing in San Francisco if you sell it to somebody who lives in who works in Redwood City?
So I would say philosophically, everyone's nodding their head, and there are also legal requirements about what you can and can't do, because you can be seen as being discriminating.
Yes, but so
I think what will happen is to the point about whatever the city is participating in, the city can put certain kinds of requirements around it, but there, but you know what, can I make a suggestion? Where's Emily? Where's Emily? Can you, Emily, can we come back to the next meeting and...
Yep, that's the topic of the next meeting.
And let's have that be, and maybe if we can get something on the website beforehand, and Mike, maybe we can get a copy, because I know you're not on on email, to understand what the policy is, because I think part of, I think philosophically what you're talking about, I think everybody's in agreement with, because this is a San Francisco challenge that we have, and this should be for people who live and work in the city, particularly for our public servants, right? Because we want our, we want to support our city as our own residents, and there are things that we can legally, and there's some things that we can't do. But we'll find out what the legal requirements are, so you'll know really clearly. So I'm going to come across this, I'm going to go across this way, and then I'm going to come back, okay?
And we should probably do two or three more, and then let... go on to the parking question.
So I don't think we can do two or three more. I think you need to answer people's questions.
We'll answer people's questions.
Sure. Parking is going to be a topic that we're going to come to next. So the feedback right now is about pedestrian, vehicular, as general park, general car circulation, and bicycle circulation. So that's three slides. So that's what this is about.
Circulation. So on the townhouses, they're all going to get parking for one car each, right?
Some may have a tandem garage where they could put two. We haven't sort of worked out the details, but that's a question mark for exactly how many spaces we provide at the townhouse.
I would not think that's a good idea. I think, but anyway, because how many units are we talking about? When we did this tour last week, I learned that all of a sudden they're talking about building more units than I had heard before. So how many cars are we talking about that's going to be added?
Yeah, and we haven't increased the number of units we're talking about building. There are questions about building height, and we're still working out what the highest buildings might be. We've said 1,100 units plus or minus in our proposal, and we haven't varied from that.
But I heard
200 units. You said 200 extra.
It's the 200 units of teacher housing. There is a possibility on City College site, if this worked out at City College, that there could be 200 units of teacher housing. But that's not part of not on our site.
Okay, that's because I specifically remember talking to a gentleman who was one of the developers last week. Who was talking about increasing the number of parking.
I think that must have been what they were talking about, is this other piece, potentially, of doing teacher housing, if that was something City College wanted to do.
And it was going to also go much higher, the buildings were higher than originally planned also.
We talked about the original sort of projected height was about 65 feet. We talked about maybe certain buildings near City College being as high as 75 feet. We will know at the next meeting much better what the maximum will be. And our goal is to keep it down.
Because my question with the circulation is to know how many cars we're going to be adding and how, and you know, to see if this is going to be able to hold all that and to carry all that and how it's going to affect the neighborhood. Because already parking is pretty bad around here for most people.
So I think it's worth saying that we've got to come back to the circulation, taking a look at what the numbers are actually going to look like to understand. Like, this is the very beginning of the conversation about
right,
it.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So we're going to do, how many more people have something related to circulation trap, what we're talking about right here? So what I'd like to do is, I want you to just make your comment, and then we're going to go, because we want to get to parking, which is obviously very important to people as well.
And then we'll have more time to ask questions.
Thank you. What the gentleman said 10 minutes ago about...
please say who you are, neighborhood.
Okay, Monica Collins on Hearst. So 10 minutes ago, the gentleman made a comment about bicycles being vehicles. What that implies, of course, practically speaking, they get the use of the entire lane. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that's the law. So that is a consideration. Secondly, I think we should stop calling it teacher housing and call it faculty and staff housing. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer, also from Sunnyside.
I wanted to ask about the shuttle that we've been talking about. We brought up many times. I don't know if that fits into the 2 million or if there's another place for that, but it is a vehicle. And the question is, if we had a shuttle, where would it go? And where would the Lyfts and the Ubers of the world go, and how do they fit into this? Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Lisa, can we just do a quick response to that?
Yep.
Just rather than so Lyft and Uber is something that we are, I mean, every building that we're working on, we're redesigning or designing, you know, the existing buildings we have, we're trying to redesign and figure out where Lyft and Uber is pulling up, because it's such a widely used thing in all of our, basically all of our buildings. So we're, you know, we've had a lot of thoughts. We can get into that at some point, but a lot of thoughts on where those pickup spots are. The shuttle, you know, we've kicked around the idea of the shuttle. We've talked to many of you about it. We will continue to talk about it. I think the big challenge that we see with the shuttle is that if we're trying to avoid the traffic, it's going to be in the traffic. And if I have somebody who wants to walk from over there to over there, it's probably going to be faster to walk at the time where we really need the shuttle. So we've worked in other jurisdictions with Uber and Lyft to provide an Uber, sort of an Uber credit shuttle, and do things that way, which is much more flexible and kind of on demand. And we think, you know, if there was a way to do that, that might be a way to solve that same problem. But, you know, buying a bus at great expense to us or City College or whoever it is that's managing this bus, I'm not sure that it addresses all the problems that we wanted to address.
My name is Christopher Campbell. I live in Westwood Park on Hazelwood Avenue. And my question is in regards to circulation. I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up, but kind of going back to the amount of traffic that's going to come out onto Phelan and Jefferson, I'm curious how expansive the net you're going to broaden at looking at what the impact of traffic will be. And I ask that in relationship to Monterey and the challenges there are to crossing the street on Monterey and how fast traffic moves on Monterey and accidents that have occurred there and deaths as well. That was my first. And then secondly, also the timing in which you'll be looking at what the traffic patterns are. And it's very seasonably variable. During the beginning of the school year, it's much busier, and I'm on Hazelwood, and it's one of the main intersections where people move to get into City College and also Riordan, and it's a total challenge. There's parking on both sides of the street, and right now it isn't feasible to manage the traffic that's there, so the timing that you're looking at that I think would be very important, that you're considering the start of the school year and looking at it throughout.
And I think it's safe to say we're working on the scope of that traffic study right now, so it's a good time for those comments. Thank you.
I'm Lyle Woodson, 1233 Plymouth Avenue. I've been on that street for 45 years. For the last 3 years, the 1200 block of Plymouth Avenue, between the hours of 7:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning, traffic has just been saturated. In the evening time, 4:15, 4:30 to 6:15 at night, traffic is just saturated. It doesn't move. Cars are beeping their horns. It's a nice place to live. And I'm not going to move.
Thank you.
Harry Bernstein, live in Merced Heights. See, there was one mention of Lee Avenue. It's a two-lane road, but I've never heard anybody mention whose property is that on? Is that part of the lower reservoir? Is it part of City College? I think that needs to be clarified, especially if it's two lanes plus bicycles. Maybe you could mention the width of that road. Also, on one of the other diagrams, so is that corner on the left, is that Lee?
Mm-hmm.
Right there?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. So there was, on one of the other diagrams, there was a thick diagonal line from there in toward the center.
From the pedestrian door.
Correct.
So yeah. That's a pedestrian.
That was a pedestrian, correct, connection. Mm-hmm. Correct, yeah.
That's a yeah. Pedestrian.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think briefly the answer on Lee Avenue is that it is on at the reservoir site, but it is, there is an easement that exists now there so that we are required to provide as a roadway that serves both City College and our development, but it is on the reservoir site. I is that accurate?
I think it's
Yes.
Emily's in.
It's 17 acres, right?
Yeah, it's part of the 17 acres.
Yeah, the last comment, and then we're going to hear from Supervisor Yee.
And that road is about 60 feet, rough numbers, which depends on what we do in terms of parking and so on alongside.
Hi, Bill Thompson, Westwood Highlands. I just wanted to hear about the pedestrian flow improvements until Balboa Park Station. In the 2008 plan, they actually had some recommendations as wild as having an additional deck over 280 by the high school to open it up. And I think the sidewalks definitely could use widening, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think the everything potentially still on the table. I don't, you know, our sense looking at it is there's a lot of incremental changes. There are a lot of important changes that wouldn't necessarily be major infrastructure pieces that would make a big difference there. But I think that's really something for, with MTA and the city and the lead, that we would love to have everyone have a focused conversation about all those pieces. I mean, just, boy, just improving widths of sidewalks, lighting, in each of those individual crossings, piece by piece, would do a huge amount. But I don't speak for the community and the city about the goals right now, or the budget.
So now we're going to shift to CAC. So Mike, go ahead.
Oh, we're not doing it at the end?
Okay. I only have two observations, and one is about the bicycle access and pedestrian access to Westwood Park. Westwood Park representatives have made clear that we will contest any type of access over San Ramon. That I mentioned that this evening getting here, I had a horrible time getting here, picking up Ann Chen and going down right now Plymouth. And with 1,100 and possibly 1,300 new people, it will be a nightmare if there's more parking allowed. The solution of residential parking permits will not work. So our key, and it always has been, topic number one, no access over San Ramon. We made that clear to the city. We made that clear to the developers. And I do thank you for putting a question mark this time. Height, I don't think that's up for topic, but somebody mentioned height. We are very concerned about going above the parameters that were approved.
Thank you.
John.
Thank you. This is a really big subject. Parking and congestion are two sides of a seesaw to me. The more parking you provide, the more traffic you're going to have, and the more traffic you have, it's algebraic. I'm not quite sure why people don't always see that. It's pretty obvious to me. There's a whole section, a whole bunch of different things that it's a big jigsaw puzzle of different parts that have moving parts that have to work together in order to get people on and off the site. It includes better muni, it includes bikes, it includes bike share, which we could put bike share stations all over the campus as well as in the reservoir. Car share, better pedestrian access. City College needs a transportation plan, which they don't have. I don't think they really understand how many people really do need to drive to City College. Not saying that nobody does, but some people do, and they need to be served. But at the same time, we need to deal with the congestion. The parking, I know we haven't gotten to parking yet, but if we insist on having one-to-one parking, we're going to have a lot of traffic. So what we voted on unanimously as a CAC was to have 0.5 to 1 overall parking in the reservoir. So if we have shared parking with City College, that was also in the parameters, is that when the parking, the unbundled parking that is 0.5 to 1 in the reservoir. It's empty during the day. We can share it with City College. It's a great idea. It's much more efficient that way. If we build extra parking on top of that 1-to-1 parking and call it shared parking, then we're de facto going to have 1-to-1 parking. And while that might sound attractive to a lot of people, it means that nobody's going to move on the street. We're going to have worse congestion than we have now. So we have to come to some kind of equilibrium on that. I'm not anti-parking, I'm not anti-car, but I think that we have to have some kind of equilibrium about parking versus congestion.
Reduce the number of units.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking.
Wait, so hold on.
Yeah. The various things that we can do, I touched on them a minute ago, is we need to get, Muni's here tonight, good to see you here. We need to have better Muni service. We need to have direct connections to downtown. I think Mike earlier made a pointed comment about how hard it is to get here. And that's why people want to have a meeting downtown instead of out here, because nobody wants to take the bus out here. We have to figure out a way to make that work. Muni it works for us, and we need to have a system of getting downtown directly from here. Also, the connection to BART, either by bus or by funicular or by foot, we have to figure out a way to make it more palatable, because nobody likes scurrying around like a rat in the tunnel in the gutter there to get to the City College from BART. There is a plan that was touched on tonight. The city has called the, I believe it's called the Ocean Avenue Redevelopment Plan or Reconstruction Plan. It's pretty much shovel ready, and it has a plan for widening the sidewalks, getting rid of the big retaining walls on City College land, and widening the sidewalks, making bike lanes on both sides of the street, making the crossings better, safer, slowing the traffic down without stopping it, and without removing car lanes, without removing capacity for cars. That really has to happen before this project even gets off the ground, before the first shovel goes into the ground, because we need to make the existing congestion better in order before we start introducing more. I could go on for a while, but I think I'll stop now.
If you have your hand raised, you have to wait for general public comment now. Okay.
Thank you for saying all those things. Many of them I wanted to say too, so I'll try to make this short, especially because I don't have much of a voice. One of the things that I wondered about at San Francisco State when I first started working there over 20 years ago, was why was there a place that had 36,000 people and no BART service? And here we are with this, we have BART, we have a number of buses, if we can coordinate with MTA, I really think that this is a unique opportunity to do this. I also want to advocate again for the shuttle idea. I think there's a lot of different people that can use this shuttle. Of course, the devil's in the details and how will we pay for it, but I think it could not only serve this new area of housing, but Lick Wilmerding, San Francisco State, the Ocean Corridor. So there's a lot of things that we could do with a shuttle to make this a lot more transit friendly. And thank you again, Howard, John, for all your points.
Thank you.
I'm going to just do a couple points. First off, this last mile question is really, really important. And I think we've got to figure out, we think that the shuttle, we actually did a charrette a couple years ago, and we thought about the idea of a gondola that was in the air, right, because it wouldn't hit the traffic, right? So if we could figure out a way to actually think about this last mile, to really think about that, and I would really encourage us, I've been having sidebar conversations, to really think about this with SFMTA to say, how do we do this in a way different than how we've done it before to come up with a real solution that's going to be a bigger answer that no one group would have thought of on their own. So I would really encourage us to do that and see things that are happening in other cities and other countries around the world that are doing a better job at transportation. I am not a bike rider. I love the theory of a bicycle, but I also know that it doesn't work for everybody. And
right.
So I think really figuring out what the right solution is isn't like, oh, look at those great bike lanes in Amsterdam and everyone's on a bike. That's not going to happen in San Francisco, right? So, but there's got to be some things out there that we could be thinking about for that last mile solution that that could actually achieve the outcome that we all want. The second thing to be cautious about is Lee Avenue and the trucks coming in out of Lee Avenue. I know you know that because you know it already from Avalon Bay, but that at certain times it's pretty intense, and they're big trucks, and that's a safety piece. And then the third thing is I want us to figure out what's the right answer. I don't want to juxtapose my Sunnyside against Westwood Park, and I totally understand the idea of the dotted line, the question mark as to whether that does or doesn't make sense. My concern is that if we are going to not have pedestrian or bicycle access to that area, that pushes more of the burden onto Sunnyside. And so if it's already been agreed upon that cars are not going to be able to enter, that seems like a pretty large concession, and I respect that concession. But I would hope that we can stay open to figuring out what makes most sense with that dotted line if it makes sense to have people being able to walk through that area, because that doesn't seem, it seems like we're building a gated community by doing that. So, and I totally get the parking piece. And the last thing I want to add is after the meeting with Balboa, I'm sorry Robert's not here, but after the Balboa Area Station Plan meeting of 2 weeks ago, or three weeks ago, we need to do a joint meeting where we bring that group together with this group to really come together, because there's so much overlap and we've got to have better cohesion.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great, thanks.
Okay.
Very good. That was wonderful feedback on this piece of it. So thanks.
So Peter, Supervisor Yee is here and he'd like to say a few words before we go to the next piece.
Before we go to Barkey, great.
Thank you. I think for those who have come here over the last year and a half, I've heard you say this over and over again, that one of the biggest issues we're going to have to resolve is this, what we're talking about today. So I'm glad the developers are putting this up front as a discussion in terms of what happens to circulation, what happens with parking. These are issues that the developers, City College, and the city need to come together and find a solution. I don't think it's one entity finding the solution. It's all of us. The circulation piece, you guys made some very good comments already, so I don't want to repeat everything. But certainly, I think I'm asking the developers to be as open as possible in regards to new ways to look at solutions, and that it doesn't always have to be one-dimensional solutions. Yeah, we talk about the sky, we also talk about the underground, where we cross streets that would slow down things and so forth. The other thing that I'm trying to push, but this is real long-term, is as I'm talking about the M line over 19th Avenue, and eventually people are talking about coming out of Westboro Tunnel to be kept under, because there's a lot of issues keeping it on the surface. I've already asked Muni or MTA to not only think about the M line, I also want them to think about the K line that could also be using the same underground from West Portal all the way out to the St. Francis Circle, and they're gonna make that turn on the Chita Pesera, keep it under, and go all the way down to BART, as far as I'm concerned. Again, that's not a tomorrow solution. It's gonna be a very futuristic, long-term solution. But if we don't push that, then we're gonna have the same problems. I mean, that could help a lot. It won't help, it won't resolve everything, but I think what we have to do is look at everything we could think of that can be a part of the solution. Only this one answer. I want to say that the shuttle bus has been mentioned. I personally support that notion that it could do a lot. We talked about it at Partner Said as a possibility when they're moving people parking spaces right now as they're rebuilding their site over there. And I think it's not only the residents there that could help. I think it was, I don't know who mentioned it, but yeah, a bunch of smart people, the kids from Brereton would could benefit from that. And even people from the neighborhood that, whether it's Sunnyside or Westwood Park, could catch a shadow at the end if they don't want to walk all the way to the park. So I'm with you. Let's try to find some solutions. If we don't find it, I don't know how this project is going to work. I'm going to say one thing about housing, just one thing. And Emily knows this already. I know you're going to talk about it anyways. But I mentioned that we passed some legislation, I think it was last year, in which any of the below market rate units has preference for the neighborhood. Okay, so before it was like free for all, anybody could, you know, could sign up for it, and you could have 100% of the people that sign up for it coming from somewhere else. And what we did was, no, that's not fair, as you were saying. So we decided that of those below market rate units, that 40% of them will go to people that apply within the neighborhood. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Yee. So now we're going to talk about parking. Is that where we're going next?
That's what we're going to talk about next.
Let's go.
Great. I'm Joel Reason, Supervisor Yee. Thank you. You'll hear a little bit about our thoughts on how we also believe that we need to work side by side with CCSF in a collaborative way to satisfy our parking needs. Several months ago, Avalon and Bridge, as they were responding to the RFP, realized that perhaps the toughest subject to conquer here was the parking issue. And with that, they asked me to come on board and help them with parking concerns. And my single focus on the team is really to manage that piece of the project. So while you've not seen me before in the CACs, you'll see a lot more of me going forward. I've worked in the city for 3 decades now, and most of my work has involved everything from primary schools, which deal with circulation issues and traffic issues, Lake Wilmerding being one of them, and recently the Jewish Home, which has significant parking and traffic issues. So with that, again, that will be my focus. So as Joe mentioned, we're here to talk tonight about our process and our methodology, and we aren't going to talk numbers, but really the ways that we think we can solve parking and circulation issues. And as Joe mentioned, managing and solving those issues is really paramount to our success. So with that, the parking methodology is first to coordinate closely with City College to understand parking needs and identify potential strategies. We understand that CCSF has been hard at work on their master plan, and actually that's really good timing for us because as CCSF is working on their master plan, we fully anticipate that we're going to figure out some way to join forces and to economize and optimize on our parking. We also will collect new data on current parking use at multiple times of the day in multiple parts of the semester. And that's actually semesters. We understand there have been plenty of parking studies done in the last 10 years. We've read them all, and we also understand that there's concern that those traffic counts were done at the wrong times. To your point, sir, we will be working very closely with Kittleson Associates. Now, Kittleson Associates, which is a traffic consulting firm, has been brought on by the city just recently to manage the CEQA process. And in that, we will be working with the city to establish certain times during the semester and semesters to do the traffic counts. We would hope that there may be a liaison from this group who could actually take a look at those counts, those times that we do it, to make sure that we're getting it right. We're gonna do several cuts of this. At the same time, we want CCSF to be involved in those traffic counts. We also encourage, the third point is to encourage the use of transit by new residents and determine whether some portions of CCF need to be met by encouraging transit for student, faculty, and staff. So, to Dan's earlier point, building lots of parking doesn't necessarily satisfy or doesn't necessarily solve the circulation issue. We have to get the parking numbers right, but just overbuilding is really not a positive thing. So the fifth point is based on the data collected, determine the proper strategy and detailed plan. Again, we will work with the community and CCF to that end. We'll also continue testing the plan as we process permits and as we build out phase one to ensure that our solution still meets changing demand. You'll see a graphic in a minute to talk about the phasing of the project. And the shared garage that you've heard about actually would be built in the second phase. And that would be several years down the road. So we're going to have an opportunity to have a check-in over the next several years to make sure that we get the parking right. So once constructed, manage the shared garage for the long-term benefit of City College and residents. So as I mentioned earlier, we believe there's an opportunity to collaborate with City College in some shared parking solution. So if I can go to the next slide. Yes, we will do counts looking at the worst case. And so this photograph was taken on the second day of school this year. We're keeping a careful eye ourselves on the reservoir lot. And in fact, this was, as I mentioned, the second day of school. Next slide. We'll also look at another case, and this was taken just a short time ago, midday, during midweek, and again, we'll take several samples. Moving on to the existing conditions, so 961 spaces are on the reservoir site today. There are close to 3,000 spaces on CCSF's campus, according to the studies that we've reviewed. Nearly 1,200 of them surround or are adjacent to the multipurpose building, and obviously 775 spaces to the north. Next slide. So this is our proposed shared use parking. As Peter mentioned, we will have these parking nodes underneath several of the buildings and where we have them noted as P. And down in the lower corner here, you'll see the future CCSF Performing Arts building and parking. Now, we've seen several iterations of the master plan, some with parking to the north, some with parking to the west. It's apparent to us that there's some footprint there where those 775 spaces that sit underneath that purple graphic are going to be accommodated in some kind of parking structure. At least that's what we've seen on the master plan. Then in the lighter purple boxes are shared use parking. We've actually been involved with other shared use garages, and the intent here is to make sure that the garage is full 24/7. We'd rather not see a vacant space in the middle of the night. So residents will be parking in the shared use garage at night. And then during the daytime, if we could go to the next slide. We know that based on the typical trends and patterns of the surrounding neighborhoods and the immediate neighborhoods, based on the data that our traffic consultant helped us with, about 30% of the people, in fact, do get their cars to commute somewhere, whether it's in the city or Marin or South Bay. And so basically what will happen is that during daytime, we'll see a traffic flow, an ebb out of the commuters, and then a flood or an ebb in, if you will, of CCSF employees, staff, and students. And at the same time, the 775 spaces, if that's what it is on the future CCSF site, will support that piece. Next slide. So then in the evening, we also, those commuters will come back in. And in fact, we predict that the shared garage will never be in full occupancy. At least that's our experience with our other shared garages. So that leaves an opportunity in the evening for events for some CCSF staff, students, and administration to be able to, and visitors to be in the shared use garage.
Does that take into account the number of night classes offered?
Yes, it does. And so what happens is that you know, we've been keeping an eye on the area around the multi-use building, which if you go out there tonight, you'll see that it's, you know, it's 25% full, something like that. So that will continue to be intact, as well as the garage for CCSF if that's built, as well as our overflow into our garage. Okay, next slide. So as we looked at the parking needs during our RFP response, we actually thought hard about what happens during what we call our first phase one. And so as the structures are being built on the south side of the property, we also want to be able to accommodate our the construction workers. So what you'll see there is a graphic where both construction workers in the tan color there, or the brown color, are in that location, and then of course the CCSF students who are parking in the reservoir today would be parking in the gray. So we'll be able to accommodate. Of course, when the shared parking structure is up and running, that will happen at the very beginning of phase two. The intent there is to be able to have enough parking to be able to satisfy workers and, again, CCSF staff. Okay.
How many fit in the gray area?
How many in the gray area? So what we're going to take a look at is we're going to be doing those counts in the reservoir, taking lots of slices of it, and we'll gauge that area according to what the need is. If it were the first day of class, we probably will not be able to accommodate that first day of class, but we'll certainly be able to accommodate some kind of need. Okay. And then we'll move on to the next slide. Okay. So with that, I'll hand it back to Peter at this point, and we'll, or is it Joe at this point? Joe's gonna take it.
Okay, so really we want to just come back and restate this, that these are the goals for these three topics we've talked about. These are the things, we distilled this down from the parameters that we got from you and tried to simplify it, tried to make it really clear for our design team and for you, this is what we're trying to achieve. And so the first three really were the first couple of topics, like walking, biking, and transit the obvious choice, help address and be part of the solution for auto congestion in the area, and preserve street parking in the neighborhoods for the neighbors. And then the fourth one is basically Joel's task, find a solution for parking that satisfies City College's needs, satisfies our needs. So I think that's where we're leaving it. So we have, so these are our questions for you. We would love to hear your questions for us. I guess we can go from that.
Okay. So
what I would say is that the purpose of this presentation on parking is to have an understanding of the methodology, that there's not a number, there's not an exact number, there's not, that this is, that they're going to come back with numbers. And I actually want to start off by actually even suggesting that Bridget, as our City College person, might be the right person to be the liaison, to be the person to make sure that the counts, when they're being taken, is correct, working with the City College team as well, and that we've got, I think it's a great idea to suggest that, and I think she's the right person to do that. So the questions that I'd love to hear from you are questions around, is the methodology right? Are they missing something? Are, you know, if something's not clear, it's really about understanding how they're going to go about figuring out the parking, not saying we're building a garage that's going to have this many spots or, you know, what the number is, because that's, I think, the goal is to get to the number. So people who have questions...
Dave Tejeda, I've lived in the neighborhood since the last century. Anyway, the issue of parking, in the shared parking, that means for people who live here and then also people who don't come at other times. So I'm assuming that based on today's projection of 10 years from now, all of the shared parking that will be used by the people who are going to live here will have electric hookups.
So with all garages that we're building today, we have the opportunity for electric hookups. So we built a garage in the East Bay several years ago, and we sized the electrical supply to be able to support, certainly not the entire garage, we'd have to upgrade that in the future, but we have ample number of hookups at this point and the opportunity to build more.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Same for the parking in residential buildings as well, at least our, you guys know that too. Yeah, we have a percentage now that are built out as electric hookups and always we're looking at the capacity.
What is the percentage?
I don't know, and I think it's evolved. You know, the buildings that were built 10 years ago were a little lower, and then we said, oh, wow, we maybe want to increase it. So 5 years ago, it's sort of been going up as we go. But I don't know the exact number of, like, today what we're building.
Thank you.
Sure.
Are you doing a parking count before the end of this semester?
So what we elected to do, given that Kittleson was just brought on board, while this may not be a count that we'll keep, we elected to have Kittleson go out and actually do counts before the final start, just to, so we could have a baseline understanding last week. And that was not done with anyone's review, because we want to do that going forward, but in an effort to just get a sampling so that we have some work, so that we have an understanding what's out there, we will use that count. We will most likely throw that count away.
Yeah, because I think you took it during the dead week.
We took it on the 4th.
My name is Ann Chin. I live from Westwood Park, also the board of Westwood Park Association. Okay, you have unbundled parking, which means that we pay separately. How are the students going to pay for us if they cannot charge them more than $5 a day?
Yeah, that's a longer discussion with CCSF that will be ongoing. I don't have an answer for you today on that.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking about unbundle as opposed to bundle, Avalon Bay, unbeknownst to Westwood Park Association Board, was not told about the unbundled parking. So the people who moved into Avalon Bay end up around the streets because some of them didn't want to pay for parking.
That's simple. So yeah, I think I'm back on now. We've talked about this, and yeah, so I understand. I'm trying to work on getting a survey to figure out if I can figure out how many people live in our building.
I have a wonderful survey for you, Joe. Very simple.
Okay, well, I'm not sure what you mean, but any information that you have for us, we'd be happy to look at. Unbundled parking is a city requirement. It's been a city requirement for a long, long time. So
when you came to board of Westwood Park Association, asked for our support, which you gave you, all seven of us, 7-0, you did not mention unbundled parking. I checked the minutes. It was not in there.
I was not in those meetings. It was somebody else from our company. I apologize if we gave a wrong impression, but it's been in city law for at least 10 years. I'm looking at some time.
More than 10 years ago. The building's been up for about 15.
I apologize. We are telling you right now, we are going to have unbundled parking. So.
Yeah, the parking, just to get back, and this does have to do with parking, about the ingress and egress from San Ramon Way. I'm just so happy. Oh, and Nita Theo Harris, Westwood Park. I'm happy to let everyone know here, and just look around the room at the residents of Westwood Park. We're not a gated community. We never will be a gated community. And the reason that we will not allow ingress and egress is because of our experience with the Avalon Project at Whole Foods. It's unbundled parking, and the residents walk to Plymouth and park because I don't know why. I guess some of them can't afford more than the high rents. So I just wanted to clarify that that is the reason and no other reason. And thank you. And one more thing, the parameters were not unanimous. Our former Westwood Park representative, who's
right here
this evening, Ms. Favetti,
yes,
right. We're happy
you're
to
right
report that she voted no. Thank you.
Yeah. We're aware. And you know, I would love to work with you guys. If there's a way to quantify how many people from our building are parking on the street, I'm not sure. I'm going to try to find out through our residents. I don't know how truthful the answers we will get will be.
Doesn't
but
matter. The parking is in the situation of is.
I think it absolutely matters. It absolutely matters because the parking situation is so critical.
Right.
And that's the only way we solve it. If we build anything, we build 10 homes here, we could have an impact on the parking. So we need to get the information so we can work with some real data and find a real solution.
Would be a better number.
So I'm sorry to bring this up again, but I just need some clarification. We were talking earlier, and I do remember again there was going to be 0.5 cars per unit. Now you're saying there's going to be 2 cars per condo. Could you
overall
clarify? For town
yeah,
house,
I will.
Town
I will clarify. So
can I actually start
sure.
by the parameter?
Yeah.
If you read the parameters, the overall ratio is 0.5 overall, okay? So what we also said specifically was you could have studio units that have 0, right? And you could have a 3-bedroom, I'm making this up, that has 2. Because if you've got a family, it's likely they might have 2 cars. But overall, that we would reach a 0.5 ratio overall, but we wanted to allow the developers to be able to creatively figure out what the right ratio of how of parking was to the different type of housing stock. Because 0.5 is the city standard requirement. But we didn't feel that was appropriate because you could have units where if it was a family, because one of the things we were really pushed for is we wanted family housing, and we knew that 0.5 with family housing is not realistic. But we also know that there are going to be studios that are going to be built, and there will be probably some small units that won't need parking at all, right? So 0.5 is the overall number. So that's the first piece. And Joe, if you want to...
And so we have, there's a bunch of different types of housing that we're building. So I'll go sort of in order. So the townhomes, the for sale townhomes along generally on the west side of the site, those we've talked about having 1 car per home, potentially more than 1 car per home. That's a function of sort of demand of what people want in the folks that are buying townhouses. That ratio will be worked into our overall 0.5 average. The rental housing will be a range, just as we have a range of incomes, there are different ranges of parking amounts. The moderate income and the market rate housing would have most likely higher ratios. So we were talking about 0.4, 0.45, so almost a half a space per apartment. The lower income units, the affordable housing, would have a lower ratio. We've talked about potentially a much lower ratio, 0.05, 0.1. And that's based on all of our experience in managing these buildings, leasing them up, and figuring out what the needs are. Folks that are in low-income housing and affordable housing in San Francisco tend to own a lot fewer cars. So that's how the buildings that I forget to use, I think that was it. So that's how our tentative design for these buildings is set up, so there's a whole range. And that the whole range, when you add it all together and sort of sum it all, it would fit within that 0.5 ratio.
Yes, I have a question about the parking methodology. It's actually driving me loca. I'm totally on board with walking because I'm not working now and I have time to walk. And, I walk to BART. It's about a mile. I walk here. It's not quite a mile. Anyway, what do we know about the driving habits of the tenants that aren't here yet? Because they're not subject to, statistics at all. They're not here. We don't know them. Secondly, and John, I think you're great, but I thought I would faint. If you're telling me they're going to drive to work every day, they shouldn't. They should be taking BART to work every day, or Muni. So that, I know that's out there, and it's not universal, but it's very common. And it concerns me a lot, actually. I really am on board with walking. Like Lisa, I'm not one for bikes. I mean, look at me. I'm not exactly a millennial, but I'm happy to walk. Anyway, I would like to see if someone can answer that question.
Joe, I can take on the I can discuss the commuter component. So we have a traffic consultant, Farron Pierce, who works on our behalf just to help guide us with our design. And we asked Farron Pierce to do a sampling of Ingleside and Sunnyside and Glen Park and sort of other communities. And what they came up with is that approximately 30% of the people that live in the district do use their car to commute. So what we did is we used an existing baseline based on that. Now, obviously, that's across the board, and we average it. So it may not be specific to Ingleside, but certainly regionally, that's what we experienced. And I would agree with you. If we can avoid having people commute by car, that would be great. And I think that what Peter was getting at earlier is that these 17 acres will hopefully be occupied with people who were here because mass transit nearby. And that's within the district, within the greater district.
And just to touch on the other question too. So as a landlord of buildings in San Francisco, we know very well the types of transportation habits of the folks that we expect to move in here. Bridge and Mission Housing, the other folks, kind of same thing. You guys are building and designing buildings all the time, trying to figure out, trying to know exactly what that ratio will be. It depends on location, depends on the neighborhood, but we are now building things at these kinds of ratios all the time, and they operate successfully and they work. The older buildings that we have that were built 10 years ago that are at 1:1, 1.5:1 parking, so more parking spaces than apartments. We've got we've got rows of empty parking lot. We're actually we're designing a garage right now in LA. Generally you drive in garages and the floors are slanted. We're designing our garage in LA to have flat floors so that looking ahead, when we don't need the parking anymore, we can convert that to another use, to office or amenities or housing. So it's definitely something that we pay a lot of attention to because garages are very expensive to build. I'm very confident that for the product that we're contemplating here, a 0.45 ratio would be is what we would expect for demand to be.
I'm Jennifer from Sunnyside. I have three questions. What is the reasoning for not constructing the shared garage first? That's number one. Number two is, can the student parking be divided between multiple garages? And if not, why not? And, because I asked that once before, third, will the shared garage clearly have two entrances and exits for cars, so parkers, some can be encouraged to go up to Ocean versus to Fila? Thank you.
So I'll touch the last one first because I'll remember it more clearly. But in any case, yes, the garage has two entrances and exits. One at the northeast corner and one at the southwest corner. Right there. First question was?
Why not build a shared parking in the first phase?
Oh, in the first phase. Thank you. So parking in the first phase. So what will happen is the first two, we did divide the project up into two phases, and the first phase will be on the southern side, will be Joe the market rate in the upper corner right here, and then the one down here is.
We're still working on
that, and so those will be podium type structures that will handle their own parking. So most importantly, we really felt that giving ourselves the opportunity to see what the behavior was of the district, if you will, over a period of time made a whole lot of sense. Rather than building to today's standards, we should probably think forward and actually look into the future to understand what the parking needs will be. I can tell you one thing from the parking structure that we built over at UC Berkeley. We've seen a behavioral change in the last 3 years because of the advent of Uber and Lyft, and actually a significant drop off in parking needs. So who knows what will happen in the next 5 years, but we will certainly want to be taking snapshots of it over the next 3, 4, and 5 years before we build it.
The other big factor is Free City and enrollment and how that may change over the next 5 years. So, the concept really is, if we have empty space, which we will have, the the northern half of the reservoir will be flat. We can grade it, we can put parking on it, just sort of the way it is now. We can use that basically as a lab to see, okay, how does this parking work? How does it fill up? We can even play around with, okay, at this fee or this rate, this is what it does. At this rate, this is what it does. And we can use that to figure out exactly how big our garage does need to be. It, you know, in some ways it says, if we do it in phase one, if we get it wrong, we use up a bunch of our space. If we wait till phase two, we have a lot more opportunity to work with, you know, with our team and with all of you to make sure we have that number that sort of in the right place.
Again, my name is Chris.
There was probably one more that we asked. I'm sorry, Jennifer, what was number two? I think we did one and three.
Yeah, every neighborhood is. Can this different parking garage be divided into two places?
Yeah.
And what? And
sure, yeah. I we haven't looked at that, but it's not impossible that we could do that. I know, you know, from talking to some of you that, you know, the thought that because it's here, it's going to push people into Sunnyside. I think there's some traffic engineering things that will have more of an impact than the location of the garage. You know, this, the drive from here to there is also really short. This is really short. People are going to decide based on where they're going and the other factors. So, you know, this is beyond my area of expertise, but when we get into this with the traffic engineers, talking about, okay, how the signals work and how the, you know, how the queuing works in the lanes, that's going to do more to push people one way or the other than sort of moving this 100 feet that way. But could we split it up? Sure. You know, I think it's obviously a little more complicated, but it's not that much more complicated.
My name is Christopher Campbell. Again, I'm from Westwood Park. And I wanted to follow up, I think it's John from the Community Advisory Committee, the gentleman, yeah, with the half car parking and the analysis you made or reference to algebra. I was wondering, in the past we've talked about this, if there are any studies that are available on half-car parking, and do you have specific examples of that? And if that's something that maybe could be posted that we could reference and look at? And then I think when I asked my question before about extending the research or survey to Monterey, that was more of a question than it was a statement as well. And then lastly, I was wondering if when you start looking at traffic patterns, if you're going to use both human and kind of the remote sensing, well, it's not remote sensing, but it's the strip that goes in the road, because if you are going to be taking just that road sampling of what the traffic is, and if you're on Plymouth and you can't get through and you've got one car that's stuck while you're waiting for another car to back up in the joggle that you have to do, the same thing happens on Hazelwood, but not to the extent that it happens on Plymouth, you wouldn't actually get accurate data on how many vehicles are there because you've got then traffic backed up in both directions and it is a bit of a nightmare. Thank you.
So examples of places where we've done point cloud parking, we've opened two buildings in the last 4 or 5 years that have under 0.5. There's one in Hayes Valley, there's one on 9th Street in the mid-market, between Mission and Market. So those, you know, those are case studies. I don't know about you guys, if you have purchased buildings that are at lower ratios. We probably put that as a comeback item and say, you know, these are some examples of where we had it. As far as I'm sure, there's a bunch of studies about how it works as well. So we can come back with more. I think you're looking for some concrete data, so we can make a point to do that. I won't put you on the spot. Do you know if we're going to study Monterey?
Part of the discussion with the city, and we made note of Monterey today, we'll see how far the net needs to be cast. And that really is going to be up to the city's traffic engineer to help dictate that.
Yeah, and then same with the methodology on how the counts are collected. I don't know that. I don't know if you know an answer to that.
No, again, that'll be the city planning department that will manage that.
Hi. Let's see. So some of these questions came about because I was at a place the other night called The Beacon, and I was watching the Uber and Lyft cars go in and out, in and out. And it was always at least five in this little driveway, which makes me think that if the ride shares have to come in, they have to come in one of these streets. So what I'd like to know is, do you have data that you can show us from projects and developments that are in existence that would show the number of Uber and Lyft trips This place, the Beacon, is basically on a muni line. So, and there's a train right there. So I don't know why, anyway, and they have a parking lot. The other thing is, do you have data on existing developments on the number of parking spaces that are being leased out by tenants? And the number of deliveries that come on a daily basis per resident?
I don't have data. I can talk about it anecdotally. So I don't know if we've ever studied the number of Uber and Lyft trips. I don't know.
This is, as a result of the advent of Uber and Lyft over the last several years, I guarantee that Kittleson will be taking a pretty hard look at what the behaviors have been on Uber and Lyft. And it's duly noted, we'll make sure that we make this a part of it.
And Uber and Lyft have that data. If you look at pickups, our company has worked with Uber on some other things. They are notoriously very difficult with sharing data. I don't know about Lyft, but that's something we can look into and try to get, because that would be the real source of it. It would be a violation of our lease if somebody was sort of renting out their parking space to someone else. We have folks, when they purchase a parking space from us, they come in and register their car. We give them a little tag, I think. So either that or their license plate. So it wouldn't, officially it would be zero in our buildings. I'm assuming it's the same for you guys. And the deliveries is a huge thing that apartment buildings have to manage, and older buildings that suffer because they don't have sort of room for all the boxes. That's really where the pinch point is. But we are always looking at where's the trash going to be picked up, where's the trash truck going to come, where are deliveries going to be made, so where's that UPS truck or Amazon truck going to pull up and park. So that's always been sort of part of our planning. It's recently become, we get those comments now from MTA and DPW about, okay, where is your place where the deliveries are going to happen? Is it close enough to the lobby? Because if you make these guys walk around the block, they just don't park. So, all of that stuff, I don't have numbers and packages, but those are things that are in our normal sort of design process.
Betsy Lafana, Westwood Park. I'm too concerned about this 0.5 parking because, you're talking about 1,100, maybe 1,300 units, and that's not 1,100 or 1,300 people. That's units. So one question is, how many actual people are going to be living in this development? Because the density of this development on the 17 acres is so out of character for all the surrounding neighborhoods. And the reason why I'm saying this is because on my street alone, anybody that's got a teenager or able to drive or older or adults, there could be three people in the house and three people have cars. Some people have three people in the house and have five cars. So, when you're talking about 1,100 people, you might have 1,100 cars. You could also have 2,000 cars. I mean, how many people do you project to live in this development? Because again, the density of this amount of people on 17 acres, I mean, Westwood Park is 90 acres. So it's so dense and we already have so much parking problem on every single street during the day. It's like a parking lot in Westwood Park. So how are we going to accommodate, a minimum of 1,100 cars, maybe even more? Because you can't tell somebody, you can't live here if you have a car. It's just wishful thinking to think that they're not going to have cars.
Right. We can't tell people that, but folks that, three people with five cars aren't usually looking for an apartment building in a dense building, or an apartment in a dense apartment building. So, looking at our buildings around the city, we don't have a lot of five-car households or even two- or three-car households. Because if that's what you're looking for, there are a lot of other housing options that you can find that would be more suitable. The question, we should have a good answer. I don't have a good answer to how many people are going to live here. We should put that down as a sort of to-do item for the next one.
Well, it'd be interesting to know, because you obviously haven't projected how many are family units, how many are studios, how many are this, how many are that. So you should be able to extrapolate how many people are going to live in your development.
We actually, so we can, and we will. We haven't broken it down that, we don't know how many two bedrooms there are, how many one bedrooms there are. We're, at some point we're going to get to that, but we're still looking at just kind of big shapes like this right now.
Right.
But yeah, I can figure out how many people live at our building on Ocean Avenue. That's a knowable thing. We will find out. You guys will sort of put our heads together, come up with a number, and we can look at
that. Right, because I just think when people hear that number, 1,100, they're thinking 1,100, but it could be three times that number.
It's 2 times that number if we had to pick. Yeah, it's two and change, something like that.
Harry Bernstein, with Sedites. Just one general question. Someone asked before about the 500 units. It was a conversation 2 years, and then all of a sudden it's 1,100. I still don't know how you got this, your spot, since the parking data at City College is false, because we've found out, because it's not based on accurate information, the number of units that you had that were going to be in the parameters, I don't know if it's official, suddenly is doubled. It's the whole thing is flawed. That's weird. Any data on the, at City College, the number of people park at the college or not going to the college just because it's close to BART. And I don't know if that skews the
I don't know, but that's a great question. And we'll
what your plan.
If there's a way to parse that out in our studies, we'd love to know that. Yeah.
People brought up Uber and Lyft. I just remember a news story from just a couple months ago. There's another place being developed downtown at Van Ness and Market, and the way the data about the demand was presented was that I think it was the planning department didn't know how much usage for Uber and Lyft and deliveries would be needed. So they just excluded that. They didn't include any estimate. They just excluded it and said, here it is, here's our study. So,
but they're not suggesting that.
Just bringing it up. This is last year. So who knows how quickly those things change. And three, one of the people in the walk around the other day mentioned that at the your property on the western end, which means adjacent to Westwood Park, that you're seeking 30 feet height to increase the height limit. There's always maybe 25 up to 30. And could you say about what that means? Does that mean more, more units?
No,
more
so,
people, or just...
So it would... I don't know if this is the best... Do you have a site plan, Marcel? Flip to the site plan. So we've shown a row of townhouses along that western edge. So if we were able to get to 30 feet in height, that would allow some of those townhouses to be partially 30 feet. And, can you imagine two stories, or partially three stories? So, if you imagine a sort of a garage lower level living
room. I'm sorry,
and
you're talking
above. Those little boxes where it says TH1 and TH2.
Yeah.
So they would still be townhomes. Instead of being 25 feet tall, they'd be 30 feet tall, which would mean some of them could be three stories.
But then you'd reduce by 5 feet somewhere else to balance what you originally had.
No,
he's talking about you increasing the height on the other side.
Right,
that's what he's talking about.
There are, we looked at the parameters, and the parameters said 25 feet on the western side, and we came back with a proposal, and we're bringing that to you guys in these sorts of forums to say,
I think
30 feet would be a better design solution, acceptable to the neighbors if we can explain to you what it is, and we've had some meetings with the folks on Plymouth to explain, this is...
But what is the trade-off for that? If you're raising that, where are you lowering?
We're not proposing a trade-off. If you're proposing that, I don't know where you'd want it to be lowered.
I think what he's talking about is you said that you're going to raise a certain portion on the eastern side of the reservoir.
We and that's not a trade-off. That's also we've proposed that we think 65 feet we could do a building in 75 feet, that would also work, and we think that would be a good idea. This is, this is the topic of the next meeting, is how the housing works, how those buildings work where they are, so how those buildings work. So we can get into this a lot more. But yeah, we've said some of the things in the parameters, we think they can work at taller heights. And not, you know, that's what we're saying, 75 on the east side and 30 on the west side. If that is absolutely not workable, we can talk about that, we'll get that feedback, and we can work on it.
Well, maybe you could give us something that lives within the parameters rather than changing them.
And if I could, that was
the community process.
Sorry, and if I could also address your concern about the traffic counts and the time that it was done, and that you felt that they weren't accurate. We get that. We've heard that. And in many of our discussions over the last several months. And as I mentioned earlier, this is really an opportunity for a fresh start with a brand new traffic consultant that's working under on behalf of the city. So they're going to be managing it, not us. And as I mentioned earlier, we very much want the input of a liaison from this group to be able to take a look at the times that we're doing those traffic counts to make sure we don't have this discussion a year from now that we weren't accurate at the times that we were doing it. We need to get it right.
And last thing, Mr. Ahrens and I had an exchange when he was talking about your whole property vis-a-vis Westwood Park. And he said basically it's 10 times as dense as Westwood Park. And I can understand why people living in Westwood Park might think that the overall density the planning is not reasonable.
No comment about
the density? Yeah. I hear your comment. I don't know the math to know how many times more dense we are than Westwood Park, but we're more dense than Westwood Park.
We'll give you the figure.
Okay.
I'm Jonathan Endel from the Ingleside. I have a comment and two questions. So I thank you for covering this parking issue because I agree that it's very important to add to Francine's anecdotes. I have some other friends as well who, you know, move to the Richmond district and the first thing they do is they sell their car because they don't have parking. Or a friend who moves downtown and the first thing he does is he gives his car to his sister because there's no parking there. So the parking really does impact, the availability of parking does really impact whether or not people decide to drive. So questions for the testing methodology for CCSF. The first week of the semester, they don't charge at all for parking. It's free parking. They're encouraging students to come basically for free and park in the reservoir and in the student parking lots. Would it be possible to charge the normal $3 per day on those, you know, on the first day of the first week of the semester as well? I understand you might not want to give them a ticket, a citation, but you know, maybe just make the citation $3 during the first week.
That's a question we have. It's a really question for City College, but I think it's a great question. You know, I would add on to that: could we give people some sort of incentive to take transit for this first week because that's when the real crush is?
Yes.
So yeah. Those are great questions. We can't answer them today by ourselves, but we'd love to get answers for you.
And second question is about, so within San Francisco, there's many different kinds of residential permit parking areas. There's, you know, there are some areas that are 1 hour, 2 hour, some areas that are 6 p.m., 8 p.m., or even later. Is there any way, you know, is there anything that we can do to study, you know, changes to the residential parking permit program to discourage people from parking in other neighborhoods? Thank you.
I think absolutely, and that is something that we, so the process is governed by MTA. It is, MTA folks are here, I don't want to hurt their feelings. It's not the easiest process for the residents, the way it's set up right now. It takes a lot of initiative from somebody that lives and say, I want permit parking on my street, you have to go gather signatures, there's a lot of things to sort of hoops to jump through. Because this is something that we think is part of a solution, you know, if what we're really trying to do is discourage people from parking on the streets in, you know, on Plymouth and Westwood Park and in Ingleside, in Sunnyside, I think this is a part of that solution. we can help facilitate that sort of the jumping through the hoops process. So it's definitely something we want to talk about, but we want to hear from the folks in those neighborhoods to see where people want it, what are the right rules for those streets, how should they work. So we would be happy and here we had some of those conversations with some of you, but absolutely we would want to have more and see if that's part of the solution.
My name is Tracy. I live in the Sunnyside District, and I have a couple of observations and then a question. My first observation is that it seems vastly unfair that Westwood Park is allowed to, just by virtue of 70 signatures, divert all of this traffic related to the parking into the other neighborhoods, the Ingleside and Sunnyside specifically, and I sincerely hope that decision will be revisited, especially by making that information available to the residents of Ingleside and the residents of Sunnyside, pointing that out. My second comment is, I feel as though your goals of transit first and encouraging bicycle and pedestrian use are inconsistent with having parking at all, much less all of the parking that is proposed in this plan. As John Winston said earlier, more parking means more congestion. And so to the extent that there's all of 0.4 per unit, I guess I appreciate that, but I would be much happier to see far fewer opportunities for people to bring cars into our neighborhood. And the last thing I'd like to say is with regard to the community, to CCSF's parking allotment. I don't know if that number is set in stone, but I see this as a very good opportunity to reverse the trend of bringing more CCSF traffic into our neighborhoods as well. So I hope that you'll keep that in mind and minimize the amount of parking that's dedicated to CCSF staff and students. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'll take those back. Do you want to take the first one?
We agree that, there's, as we mentioned earlier, we think there's an opportunity for us to figure this out with CCSF. And we don't know what that is yet, but there's got to be a way that we can optimize on the number of parking spaces. And
I think that's not a question we can answer, but we're definitely would love to engage with City College on a way to do that. The question about not having parking at all, as a landlord, it's a little tougher to lease apartments if you don't have any. It's something we have, not sure if we've done it. Other folks are buildings that don't have any parking. Most of those are in places that are right
Mercy.
On top of, Market Street and things like that. What was that, John?
Mercy Housing.
Yeah, right. So Mercy Housing. So it's not impossible, but it's a much different thing. There's also a political process that we need to go through for that. So there's that consideration as well. And then Westwood Park, I'll just say, one of the requirements for our proposal was that Santa Ramon Way would be blocked off for access by automobiles. I believe it was silent on pedestrians and bikes. So that's what we're responding to.
Okay, so now I'm going to just turn it over to CAC members for comments. Want to go first? All right, a lot of very interesting issues going on, and I appreciate folks who stayed on the topic. I had several questions. Comments and questions. One was regarding the Kittleson series of studies. So I've mentioned this before, but when you go on campus for the first few weeks and the last 2 weeks, it kind of, it's very different. But if you take a careful survey over the time of the semester, you'll get a more accurate result. So I hope that's what they'll be doing.
That's the plan.
Okay. And I also wanted to know if there'll be car sharing parking spaces inside the... Okay.
Yes. Yeah, in our buildings, as well as probably your garage. I would assume your garage, too. Yeah.
Okay. And... regarding someone that made a comment about maybe City College reducing the number of parking spaces, I would say that is the hope, but right now we are trying to maintain and increase our enrollment, and that is our number one priority.
I don't know who said it, but we've had quite a few hits, okay, quite a few hits these last few years, and City College is coming back better than ever, but we're coming back, and so so that's something that we need to take a very careful look at. The other thing I wanted to say was in general, regarding trends, I think you can see trends about who's driving and who's not. And I've mentioned this before at the CAC. I'm a mid-century kind of gal. You know, I got my license at age 16, but I work with millennials, and I don't know why they don't capitalize proper nouns, but I do know they don't drive like I used to. So they don't drive like I got my license at 16. I didn't even have a car, but I was ready to go, and that's just how we got around. But now there's a lot of other options, and I'm really proud of actually our millennials for you know, bringing this trend to bear. So I think that's something that we need to look at in the future. The driving trends of the last century are not going to be the driving trends of the new century. They'll probably have flying cars like the Jetsons or something.
Nice segue to what I was going to say. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm thinking too. You know, we're looking at trying to get accurate numbers about CCSF's parking needs, but the best we can do is get a snapshot in time. I mean, we can try and get a really accurate snapshot of this particular time, or maybe a wide bracket of time, you know, between semesters or weeks or days, but it doesn't really tell us what we're going to need in 5, 10, 15 years. It's to me, it looks like, I don't have numbers to back this up, but I think that CCFS present day existing conditions, their parking needs have been kind of inadvertently socially engineered over years to by low pricing and plentiful supply to encourage driving. And I mean, you look at that big wide open space of parking, and $3 a day, you know, $40 a semester, well, who wouldn't drive?
Yeah.
And it seems to me that what City College needs, and, you know, I don't want to put it all on City College, because we've done our part here by keeping low parking ratios. I would love to see zero parking, but I'm realistic about it. But we have done our part to try and reduce car trips from the reservoir, from our residents. And I believe that City College needs to also develop a transportation plan, because they don't have one. They need to think about providing choices, really. We're not saying we're going to socially engineer you out of your car and force you out of your car and make you ride a bicycle, even though you're, you know, 70 years old. And I mean, we can't do that, but we can offer choices. And we can offer a free fast pass along with your free tuition. A free fast pass. They have the Gator Pass at SF State. Why not at City College? We could offer better bicycle facilities, places to put your bike if you do choose to ride a bike. If that's one of your choices that you have, is to ride a bike to school, then you should be able to park it somewhere, or be able to have a safe space on Ocean Avenue to be able to ride it without fear of being killed. Other options are, as I said earlier, a new shuttle, perhaps, maybe run by Muni, more frequent Muni service. As Supervisor Yu was saying, maybe an underground K-line, an underground M-line. Supervisor Wiener has always been talking about how we should always have a subway under construction in the city. And that it's these big picture things that I think we need to be looking at to, instead of inadvertently socially engineering people into driving, so that they think it's the only option that they have, give people a choice and give them the opportunity to make the choice and to have more choices other than what they have. I guess it was Nelson Nygaard a while back came and talked to us in this room about how they were going to do a transportation demand management plan for the whole neighborhood. All Sunnyside, Westwood Park, Ingleside, City College, Reservoir, and it was going to have teeth. It was going to have, if people deviated from it, they would pay in some way. Now it sort of looks like it's a framework of some kind of nebulous framework, and it doesn't really have any kind of energy behind it to influence how we build this project and how we manage the number of trips in and out of the reservoir and out of City College. So I would like to start from the beginning again and actually do a real transportation management program that is not a framework but actually has teeth and has it gives us a roadmap how to reduce trips in and out of the neighborhood. And somebody mentioned Uber. The thing that I've been reading lately is that, you know, as a bicyclist, I have a lot of trouble riding up and down Valencia Street. Those wonderful bike lanes that went in 10 years ago are now filled with Ubers and Lyfts. And you basically, if you want to ride a bicycle in Valencia, you're riding in the traffic lane now, because the bicycle lane is now a pickup lane for Uber. The prevailing thinking now in the city is to create spaces for Uber to do pickups and drop-offs, which means they have to change their app, and the app has to tell you where to go stand to wait for your Uber. You can't just wait anywhere. And so we should probably, in this plan, figure out a place for Ubers, a kiss and ride for Ubers, and for other drop-offs and pickups. I talk too much.
Thank you. First, I'll address our first big point. You know, we gave you three big points. We already discussed one tonight. Our first big point was, let's protect City College. Let's make sure we do everything right for City College. They're just off their feet. When I met you in my room, we talked about that. We have to get the parking solution. I don't say you need more parking, but we have to have an expert look at it. It was just a month ago that the Facilities Committee of CCSF, and I was there, passed a resolution unanimously saying that we have to have a study, and they've authorized it. So they're going forward. Today, you've said that you have a new consultant that you've hired with respect to traffic study. Not parking, but traffic. So both sides, City College and the developer on the city, City College on one side and the developer on the other side, still have no facts. Tonight I asked a number of questions. How many are up there? No facts. I have stated my position consistently. I stated it with the San Francisco PUC, that this could be very devastating to City College. You could be halfway through your development and find out, oh, 1,100 is too much. We should have had it a lot smaller. And until you have a resolution of what's going to happen, how much City College needs, they will irrevocably use a piece of property that they've been using for 30 or 40 years. And maybe they should continue to use it. So they should do their own study. You can do your study. And only then should you proceed with the development. I think you're going too fast.
Well, that's the plan, Mike.
I'm just making
Have all the facts, though?
I'm not asking a question. I'm making a comment. Okay?
Okay.
So that's my comment number one. And I would hope that the negotiations would proceed. Even the two commissioners down there at City Hall, when I made the point that there's no condition in this contract for doing a deal with City College, said in the asset purchase agreement there better be something about City College. And one of them recognized that City College students are different. They're transient. They have to run to work. And so I make my point again that until this project speeds ahead, City College and the city should get to a resolution to protect City College. That was my point number one. Point number two is density. I've always told you, I've told all the developers that would listen to me, that 1,100 units is just too much. Yeah. The parameters did not cover 1,100 units. The parameters covered something a lot less than that. The numbers are right. We have 90 acres in Westwood Park, 667 residential units. With 1,100 units and 17 acres, it comes out to about 10 times, approximately 10, a little less than 10 times the amount of space. Now, maybe that's just too much traffic. Maybe that's too much parking. Maybe that's too much people for that space. We think it is. But that was the first issue that we raised when we met, the issues for Westwood Park. And that will continue to be an issue as you go through your studies, as you go through your process. The City College and the number of parking spaces are definitely our biggest issues, and traffic. Traffic for the whole neighborhood, not just Sunnyside, not just Westwood Park, but the whole neighborhood. And so those are the comments I have tonight. This is very preliminary. It's like the TDM. The TDM, I thought, Nygaard came back to us. But did they come back to us again? No, they went to the Balboa Park and made a presentation. Robert even agreed, I think. He's not here. That this is not really a studied, numbered analysis yet. And I do think we need one with numbers, not with guesses as we have today. Those are my comments.
Can I have the microphone?
No. Actually.
I have to give it back to the chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't. You were gonna. I'm so sorry. Can I come to you?
Yeah.
So that's a great segue to the first comment that I wanted to make, which is about the NIGARP TDM study. And I said this at the meeting a couple weeks ago, which is we need to go. So I think when that study was done, it was done as a way to actually get everybody to weigh in, frankly, getting City College to lean into this issue because it was not on their radar for lots of reasons, right? So I think at this point, that becomes a ghost footprint, if you will, of they did one round of TDM, we added a ton of stuff to it, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think at the end of the day, the outcome of the TDM is that City College is at the table in a very different way than it was 3 years ago. So I think that's the outcome of that TDM. And I think we need to go back to that process, and I know Jeremy's right behind me, and say, what did we learn? What worked? What didn't work? What did they get wrong? What was everybody complaining about because so many things were wrong? I'm looking at Rita, because I know Rita knows. There were a lot of things that were not done appropriately, like accurately, and I used with a really small A, not a capital A. So there were a lot of things that could be done differently. So I think we need to take a look at that. And as a part of that, as a subset, I think we also need to look at creating a transparent system, that we need to be able to have something online so that you can all go online and say, oh, they did the count today. Oh, wow, at 12 o'clock there were 700 cars parked. Oh, I would have thought that would have been higher at 8 a.m. Because I think the other thing is we all have different pieces of information, and we don't have the collective, we don't really have a good collective picture. And I agree, Mike, wholeheartedly that we have got to protect City College, because if we don't get this right, it comes at a large cost to us collectively as a city because of what City College does in terms of workforce development and for future generations, as well as people retooling them for workforce development. And the other thing I would like us to also think about as it relates to this ratio of the buildings. One is that because this has been, we talked about this from the beginning, as being housing that was family-oriented housing, I want us to be really careful to not just assume that Bridge, based upon what you've done in the past, that number is going to be the same, because this is a neighborhood that's like a family neighborhood. So those numbers, let's be clear. We have a lot of transit, but I wouldn't call it transit-rich because it's not transit-connected and it's not ample in it. Enough we have transit. It's not like when you build a building and you're at the Castro Street muni line, right? So it's a hassle to still utilize our public transportation. So just to be really careful with when we start to extrapolate percentages, that we do some kind of calculus around, okay, well that might be true for this site or this location, but this might be a little bit different. That ratio is going to be smaller or whatever because of the fact of this is a family-oriented neighborhood and who tends to live here. And I would just encourage us to have complete transparency as much as we can, as you've begun to do, and just as the research is being done, that we share stuff and we keep, having Bridget be able to be the liaison with City College, and I think having a regular standing meeting with City College on a regular basis as this continues to unfold is going to be really, really critical. So it's 8:30, so we've gone over on time. We have to do one last general comment period for any last comment that people want to make. If there's any final general comments.
Well, so Lisa, you want to say?
And then we want to talk about the next steps, right?
When we get to next steps in a minute.
Okay.
Do we want to do anything that we can answer? Because formal public comment, we can't answer. So do we want to have another opportunity to answer questions, or do you want to just close it?
So I have a question. Does anybody else have, raise your hand if you've got something that you want to ask. Is there a question that you'd like to get answered right now? Okay. On today's topic. Okay. So we have four people.
Three or four more, that's fine.
So we're going to do four, and then we're going to say next steps, and then we're done. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Who are the four people? I'm going to go to you first. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I didn't see your hand.
So,
evening. What is your name, sir?
Mike Aarons.
Mike.
You said something very, very reasonable, and that is to slow down a little bit what we're trying to accomplish. Reason being, I think we're creating a problem that does not have a solution. I come to these meetings and I feel like I'm squeezing blood out of a rock, where the simplest solution is, why do we have to put 1,100 units? If we just reduce that, that would, excuse me, and I don't want to be insensitive to the housing problems. I know it is a critical problem in San Francisco. And I think that keeps a lot of people from speaking up, because you're almost embarrassed to be politically incorrect. But we have to have a balance. And what I feel is like, why are we stuck with 1,100? Why can't we start looking at a more reasonable percentage of density? Like Mike said, 10 times more. You're trying to put 10 times more people than we have in Westwood Park. I'll give you another example. If you try to come from work between 5 and 7, you're stuck, as it is right now, right there on Ocean and Healing. And you're bringing 2,000 more people, and I do not believe that people with families will sell their cars. I don't believe that, because when you have kids, you have to take them to school, take them to soccer practice. If you have, and on top of that, if you have a dog, you want to take your dog to the park, you have a medical emergency, you want to have that car for when your five-year-old needs to be taken to the emergency. So as a family, I am not selling my car. So that to me is not a reasonable expectation. So what I like to see, and just the last thing, I would like to see more studies on transportation before we settle on the 1,100 units. I think that's reasonable. If the neutral professional transportation report comes saying, you know, this neighborhood can definitely hold 1,100 more units, 2,000 more people, 2,500 more cars, then let's talk about them. Let's talk then again. We'll revisit 1,100, but we're putting the cart in front. We're doing it the reverse. We're choosing a large number. We're creating a huge problem, and we're all frustrated because we can't find a solution. And please don't take this personal, because actually we liked you guys very much. I invited Scott to my house, and you have an open invitation. This is not personal. This is our home. So when we know how hard it is to live with the present traffic situation, and you don't live here, we do. Marilyn Rodriguez, and I live in the Sunnyside.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't take it personally. I think. I always come to these, and you know, it's not maybe the most fun part of our job, but you guys are all here because you care about your neighborhood, and you have real legitimate concerns. It would be possible, you know, the history of development, there are a lot of examples of developers who have come in and promised a lot of things, and, you know, they screwed things up. And so you guys need to be here, you guys need to hold us accountable. That's what I think this is, and that's what the rest of the process is going to be. I'm going to just have a real brief answer. I agree with you, I agree with Mike. We don't have all the facts yet. We need more facts. And you should absolutely expect that we need to come back to you and say, okay, we've done our studies. We've gathered these facts. And this is how big the garage needs to be. This is the ratio. This is everything. All
that
the little details. So that all has to happen. I think that's what we're trying to say with the slides. We need to go get that data. In order to do it, we need to start the study. So that's the process. That's the point of the process we're at, is to go get that information.
But the 1,100 number of units seems like it's stuck in everybody's head without any professional study, and that's what I like to bring.
So let's
do the study, and then we'll revisit the amount of density.
Well, so it's a little chicken or the egg. We have to study something.
That's right.
We're pretty good at building buildings, and our professional opinion is we think we can serve 1,100 new families, new households in this location, and not have the impacts that you guys fear. So you guys need to absolutely ask for more information to make sure that you believe us, but we think that that's the right number.
We don't believe you.
I know that.
Because we have already a huge problem, so you're bringing a lot more people, and it's like, it's almost an insult to us. That's how it feels.
Yes.
I mean, is the building that we built there, was that an insult? Because, you know.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Okay, I apologize. It was not intended as an insult.
But you're going to do the same thing again.
I have 60 windows looking down on me now.
Okay. So,
right.
So in order to provide housing for our city, things are going
to
change.
If you have something you need to say, please raise your hand. You've done such a good job for 2 years in doing that. I hear the frustration. That question was very clearly, we heard that the unvocal parking was not a part of the original thing. Westwood Park has certainly felt this. So I think in order to build the trust, I think going back and being able to get the numbers, to have transparency, and I think you have to be willing to say,
yes,
if 1,100 isn't going to work,
yes,
it
yeah
could
and
be,
should,
the number could be less.
And,
yes,
and we have said that in the past, so I should say
you
that as well.
You haven't said it enough.
I will say it again. If this is wrong and it's not going to work, and if we can't prove it and say, look, this is the reason why, then, yeah, it's going to have to change.
All right, well, let's be
so
honest then.
Yeah.
And now it's in the minutes.
Oh, good.
I just heard it.
Yeah. And if you don't hear from me, you're going to hear from Supervisor Yee and the rest of the folks that have to approve this project. So.
Jennifer from Sunnyside again. I'm asking you for flexibility on the shared garage in terms of the testing phases and seeing if you can break that up differently. And the reason is I'm concerned about synchronization for maximum parking for students during the development, because I think there are not going to be enough parking places while different phases are being developed. Unless maybe you do the lower, the where D and E are right now, if you need something to show a real development, and then do HJ, but leave enough space.
Yeah,
so I'm asking you to consider that.
Yeah, that's a good comment, and the other part of that equation is what happens over here. So as we learn more about the timing and plans for the City College side, that's part of that equation.
Going back to the traffic circulation, will a fire department hook and ladder truck fit around there? Don't answer it yet. Okay, we were told, we've been going to these meetings for a long time, we were told 500 units. The cronies from the mayor's office told us that. And now they've entered into exclusive negotiations with you folks, and you've more than doubled that number. That's 10 times the density of the surrounding residential area. If you think that that's going to improve the quality of life and reduce traffic problems in this area, you are on some kind of drugs. And that's what you're hearing now. I am not concerned about parking and traffic and all those circulations for now or the next 5 years. I'm concerned about it for the next 50 years. This is 10 times the density. The mayor's cronies have already told us that they cannot be trusted. And now they've come into exclusive negotiation with you folks. I'm sorry, but your credibility is about that much.
Okay, now, are you at the four? Yes, so you're four and then you're five, right?
Yes, just a general comment. I've been in this land use business for a very long time, and it gets very emotional. And I really respect everyone's opinion, and all I would ask everyone going forward, it's very difficult, but we shouldn't demonize one another, you know? And I really think that no matter how you feel and how emotional you get, that when you demonize someone who says, well, we need housing and we don't care if there's 5,000 homes, and the other way around. So I would just ask someone to consider, ask everyone to consider that going forward. Thank you.
I saw a reference in the meeting notes about something I still didn't understand, which is you've mentioned meetings that you're having with different stakeholders and constituencies. And I'm curious about what is going on with meetings with City College, because you made a distinction that you need really at some point to include City College stakeholders such as students, faculty, and classified staff. So what are these meetings? Who goes? And then can they be more widely attended? Or is there something, because I don't remember ever seeing, unless you're talking about facilities committee or something like that, I don't know what those
right
meetings
so
consist of.
That's a great question. I think this is probably a place where we are behind, to be perfectly honest. City College is a complicated place, as many of you know, and we have tried to sort of, at the guidance of the city, tried to start with the Board of Trustees and with the Chancellor's Office, and we've started there. It has been a lot slower than we liked, and I think it's been, you know, this City College just hired a formal liaison to our project. We still haven't had a formal meeting to sit down with her. So we're working on that. We are, I think, as a result of that being a little slower, we have not reached out to classified staff, faculty, students, and when we need to. So, you know, I know we've been a topic of discussion at, you know, AFT 2121 meetings and things like that. That is a constituency we need to reach, we need to hear from. So
let us know what your plan is.
Okay, yeah, and we will do that. But hopefully by the next CSC meeting, we can have some specifics on when that's happening. So.
So closing comments on this is the next set of meetings. So our next meeting, actually, this isn't the right, this is a generic slide. It's actually the slide that's the next meetings, kind of like slide 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah, so it's, yeah, Marcia, you switch all the way back. So it's
January 22nd.
January 22nd, we will be talking about housing, and housing meaning who the housing is for, what the housing is, and also the buildings, the size of the buildings, the shape of the buildings, and architecture.
And neighborhood character.
And neighborhood character.
And neighborhood character, yeah.
What location?
So that will be here. We're going to have an open house. We're still sorting out where that's going to be, but what we're envisioning is a Friday and a Saturday, you know, all day or all afternoon, evening, have folks from our team at a location right in this neighborhood. People can walk in, ask us questions, talk about things, give us ideas, and sort of have an open dialogue that way. We're also hoping that on a Friday we do find some students and staff and we're able to communicate that way, but that's not enough. We need more, but that's part of it. And then number 5, February 12th, sustainability and sort of bringing it all back. We've been asked by the city, as we said before, we've been asked by the city to hold a meeting in a more central location. I'd like to say on the record that I took part here today from downtown. It was very easy, much easier than driving. So just FYI for the folks that have said that that's difficult. But I think you guys are working on finding a location near Civic Center, so that meeting number 5 will be there. But as we've said before, we're also open to come to any of the other neighborhood group meetings and other things. So if that downtown meeting is a problem for the folks that live in this neighborhood, you know, we'll give me a call. We'll talk on the phone. And we'll come here to your living room, whatever you need. So we will be available.
Great. Okay, with that, we're going to adjourn at 8:44. Thank you, everybody.
We should defer consideration of minutes because we're
yeah.
Okay. And when is the one man going to be exactly February 12th?
And you know what? Make
sure they put in the minutes that was Anita who said that thing about it. Yeah. I'm going to talk to you about it.